Hello and welcome to the iCounty Duo podcast. I'm your host, Naomi Williams. This podcast is brought to you by iCounty World, makers of beautifully British pushchairs for parents across the globe. We're delighted to be joined on the iCounty Duo podcast by Fiona Mann, founder of Project Mama, a registered charity based in Bristol that offers free, confidential and individual focused holistic support to women throughout pregnancy, labour, childbirth and those first few weeks of parenthood. The charity currently supports pregnant refugees, asylum seekers, survivors of modern slavery, human trafficking and other displaced women. We caught up with Fiona to learn more about her sisterhood network, promoting an understanding of a woman's rights and entitlements surrounding maternity healthcare. Hello and welcome to the iCounty Duo podcast, Fiona. It is lovely to have you on the show. How are you?
Yes, very well, thank you. Yes, feeling quite fresh this week.
Good. Oh, fantastic. Well, it's March. You know, it feels kind of a bit fresh and ready for new things coming out of pandemics and things like that, doesn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. Spring is on its way.
So for our viewers, because you are the founder of Project Mama, which is an amazing registered charity based in Bristol. For our listeners that may not be completely aware of what you guys do, could you just kind of briefly explain what the charity is and actually why you set it up?
Absolutely, yeah. So Project Mama is an organisation that was set up 3 years ago yesterday. And we support women who are displaced, so seeking asylum with refugee status. Sometimes we support women who are from Europe, the European Union, but they've been in the country for a short amount of time. Many of our clients are survivors of human trafficking. And we support them throughout pregnancy, throughout labour and childbirth, and then the first 8 weeks of their baby's life. And we do that because of the obstacles that many women face coming to this country for the first time, perhaps, and because of that trauma that a lot of women hold. And so it came about because in another life, I was supporting survivors of human trafficking and modern day slavery as a support worker. And many of the women that I was supporting were pregnant as a result of the exploitation that they'd experienced. And they would ask me as their support worker to attend births with them because they simply didn't have anyone to go with them. They didn't have a support network over here or any family. And so that's how it all began, really. I kind of realized that there was a real need for this, not only for survivors of trafficking, but also for a wider body of people who are in the Bristol area who don't have this crucial one-to-one support. And I was kind of surprised at how many people there are out there. In the first year, we supported, I think, just 12 women, but last year it was 45 throughout labour and birth.
My goodness. Yeah, that's incredible. I mean, firstly, happy third birthday. That's incredible. So, you know, you're still quite in your infancy, you know, 3 years in is quite a short span of time, actually, for a charity. But you've managed to support, is this right, over 80 mothers throughout that pregnancy, birth and early parenting. So and it actually, from what you just said, it seems to be quite a bit of an increase last year in those numbers. I mean, That's an incredible thing to achieve, you know, 80 mothers that can sort of, that have had your support through those key moments. And, you know, I probably wouldn't have been able to have that kind of level of support if this charity wasn't there. I mean, how are you going to be celebrating this achievement that you've done?
Well, unfortunately, we can't have a wonderful event with all of our mamas and their babes showing up with toddlers now. Owing to the current situation. So we're just doing it online. So we're encouraging people to take part in our Throwback for Project Mama campaign on Instagram and Facebook, where people share either their own picture of themselves when they were a baby, or maybe their own children, or even a friend, to raise the awareness of our project, and also just to raise some crucial funds for the charity so we can keep going.
That's a lovely idea. That's a really lovely idea, just kind of to share that sort of content and that sort of messaging. Because also, it's very close to International Women's Day. And for 2021, the theme is kind of choose to challenge. I understand that Project Mama is kind of working to that theme, you know. So what are you guys doing around that, to, you know, what are you challenging and how?
Absolutely. So we're really trying to challenge the paradigm of maternity support in this country. So midwifery has shifted over the years to be something very different in our culture and society to what it was even 50 years ago. So midwife means, the word itself means with woman. And yet there's so many pressures put on midwives that people seek additional support from doulas or birth coaches, I suppose. And so I became aware of doulas, and I thought, well, it's kind of almost considered a luxury item or a luxury person, a luxury support that people can pay for that really, really crucial nurturing and consistent emotional support throughout their journey. And so I decided to see if any of these doulas with this amazing experience could kind of turn it on its head. So people who have maybe been in the country for only a few months, sometimes even a few days, can have this highly specialized birth support. So we're kind of providing this care to people who wouldn't ordinarily be able to access these individuals. So the doulas that we have, we actually don't call ourselves a doula project. Many of the people that volunteer are midwives or retired midwives. We've had student midwives. We've had NCT teachers. We've had postnatal yoga teachers join us. So we can provide like a really robust, nurturing support for mums. And ideally to focus really on the pregnancy journey when a mum has so many other conflating things going on in her head, such as navigating the complexities of immigration or housing, many of whom are experiencing destitution or are escaping a violent or abusive situation.
Yeah, and are these one-to-one specialists that you're referring to, are they what you call sort of your mother companions?
Yes, there are mother companions, or MCs for short.
MCs, I like that.
And how it works is that each mother referred to us has a team of three MCs to support her. So we're able to provide really robust support as a team of volunteers. And also, because as we know, labour and birth can really take place over a really prolonged time. So it's really important that a mother gets to know all three of us, so we can, for a start, cover the on-call period, so normally from 37 or 38 weeks in a mum's pregnancy, until she gives birth. And maybe we'll, if one of us has been at a labour for 12, 13 hours, then she can have a fresh energy in the room and we can switch out and another mother companion can come. So she continues to get that gold standard of support that she really needs.
That is incredible, because you're, you know, just kind of referring back to what you earlier said, and it's actually, it kind of echoes very similar conversations I've had with quite a few across these podcasts. Positive Birthing Company being one, talking about hypnobirthing and it almost being, you know, available for this kind of sense of the elite. It's not like readily available for everyone. So you're not necessarily making kind of, you don't have the full suite of decisions, you know, as a pregnant woman, of what you can do. But especially, you know, with these women, like you say, you know, they've been here, they could be from a day to, you know, a few months, and they're really having to tackle kind of the whole menagerie of different things, you know, that this country can throw a pregnant woman at, that key stages of, you know, just gearing up for birth. And I imagine it's probably like a dream come true, if you know what I mean, like no less than a dream come true, to be able to have these amazing mother companions, these supports, like you say, they're doulas, they are ex maybe training or ex midwives, to be able to be there for that level of support. That's As it is extraordinary. That's a brilliant thing to be able to provide to, you know, without you guys, I'm sure just wouldn't really exist.
Yeah, and I think that's where the kind of concept of like professional friends come in. Many of our clients, when we go in and meet them for the initial meeting, just to explain who we are and what we do, so many mothers have said, oh, so you're like my sister or you're like my friends. And in this culture and society in Britain, we've become quite detached from that and both become quite medicalized. So many cultures and societies globally still very much rely on this team, on this network of women that will be surrounding her when she's going on this amazing journey to motherhood. So we try and as best we can replicate that in the most person-centered way we can. You know, we're very informed by our clients and what they want. We talk about what birth might look like in her country of origin, who might be around her, what the hospital setting is like or a birthing center is like if she would attend that. Any kind of traditional bits of midwifery that aren't readily available on the NHS. So we can kind of incorporate that into her support as much as possible.
That's amazing. I mean, how has COVID-19 affected then you guys with this level of support? And, you know, have you been able to kind of adapt your services during this period?
Yeah, I mean, luckily, because we are small and young ourselves, we were able to adapt quite quickly. So when COVID hit, I think it was March the 15th or 16th last year, we were like, okay, so there's going to be a lot of people who don't have access to information about what is going on. I mean, we knew very little ourselves as native English speakers who could tune into the radio or read a newspaper. So we immediately called every mum who we'd supported since the beginning of the project and said, how are you? And are you aware of what's happening? We used language interpreting services so we could explain current guidelines. And the mums were feeding back to us that they were going to the supermarkets and they weren't able to get nappies or wipes or formula milk, even basic food items. I think we all kind of were aware of this bulk buying that people were doing.
Yeah.
And we had several mums saying, I've got two nappies left. What do I do? So we kind of sprung into action and rallied a whole troop of incredible volunteers Bristol-wide to go to those outlying supermarkets and source essential items to mums. And we started delivering them as part of our solidarity care package programme. And so at the peak of lockdown, we were calling up to 200 women a week and making sure that they had essential items. And then we had all these amazing delivery drivers dropping off formula nappies, wipes, and we referred mums to local food box schemes as well, so they knew that they had food coming in weekly. Many of these women don't speak English as a first language, maybe they'll have two or three children already, and so even logistically getting to the supermarket was a challenge. Also, many displaced mums have additional needs in terms of health. So many people were having to shield. So we were able to just provide like a really simple intervention to make sure that arguably the most vulnerable people in our society had what they needed to make sure that their children and therefore their own welfare was catered for.
I mean, that is utterly fantastic that you guys, like you say, it's a seemingly simple intervention. Like you say, but how much of a vital lifeline. I have to say, I did stand like sort of astonished. I think the real panic buy kind of hit, yeah, like you say, very early on in that first sort of initial hit of in sort of March of the pandemic. And it was just like a kind of really bad reflection on the societal kind of panic and entitlement where they just mass bought absolutely everything, and it's with such little regard to those that financially was are stretched. They can't buy bulk buy, because it also kind of extends to our sort of pensioners or people that are on their pension and things like that, where they consistently go in for a week shop, buy what they need and go home. But because of the situation in the super, I mean, it was all over social media and the news, where it'd just been ransacked. And then the devastation of seeing then following week of people throwing away huge volumes of food because they just massively overbought. So it's such a shame. Like, obviously, you guys kind of sprung into action, were able to kind of provide that lifeline, like I've said. during those periods, because I mean, I don't think, you know, anybody in the country would have really expected it. But like you say, if it's not even, you know, you're new to the country, you don't quite know how we work, and like, you know, even sort of local supermarkets and all this kind of stuff, and you're not even really necessarily understanding what the news is reporting, you know, you go to the supermarket and go, what has happened here? That, you know, it's it was a real mirror up to our society, I have to say, this kind of bulk buying situation. I did think it was kind of a bit of a downside to all of us, considering we didn't really know how long the situation was going to last. I mean, you know, we've all sort of calmed down a bit now, but it's amazing that you were able to provide those essentials to the mother and the children during those times, so they didn't get hungry, you know, which is the most important thing. I mean, actually, I was looking over your Instagram page, and you kind of made a reference on one of your posts that actually you've seen a dramatic rise sort of in the last sort of year, I guess, the kind of key pandemic time, in referrals of these, you know, lonely mums seeking asylum in Bristol. What is the reason for this stark increase, do you think?
So the reasons are kind of multiple. So, I mean, as we've seen in the press, the UK is experiencing what the government deemed to be a migrant crisis. We, however, prefer the term migrant reception crisis. We're an incredibly wealthy country. There's far more countries with a lower GDP who are supporting and allowing safety for people seeking asylum. We're seeing geographical political situations, the intensity increase. And also in Bristol, we're seeing Home Office accommodations opening up just like they are all over the UK, which again has been well documented in the news lately with army barracks being used to house quite traumatised individuals seeking asylum in the UK. Another factor is that because we're three, you know, and because we did the COVID response, we're becoming increasingly well known within the healthcare system in Bristol. And so midwives and local charities are aware of the support that we're providing and will refer to our service. And on top of that, we've seen that there's an increase in vulnerability owing to the pandemic. Again, you know, nationally, there's been more instances of intimate partner violence, for example, people wanting to escape situations where they're potentially in the path of harm. And so we've been able to support many mothers throughout their journey to safety as well. So I think that the pandemic has really exacerbated these already pre-existing issues that have been, you know, lasting in a woman's life already.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. I think, yeah, I'm just taking in what you said. It's kind of, it's quite sobering. And I think, domestic violence has, I don't know the statistics on it. You're probably better placed to kind of reference on it. But, you know, especially with the pandemic lockdown, being in that situation must have been hell for a lot of women going through that time. And then also you've got, you know, furloughs, redundancies. It's a lot more stresses and strains that, you know, where again you couldn't have planned it, you know, it's kind of been the fallout for such an unfortunate, challenging time. I've been sort of reviewing over your brilliant website. Actually, it's really, really informative, and the what we do sort of section is, it's got some quite alarming statistics, and I'll actually quote it. It's from the Royal College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, and I quote, so alarmingly, women from migrant backgrounds are four times more likely to suffer postnatal depression than other women in the UK. Their babies are more likely to be stillborn or born prematurely, to have low birth weight, or to have birth defects. Maternal mortality in this specific demographic is also disproportionately high. And that was actually from that journal from 2015. And just from reading that, it kind of rang bells from a lady that we spoke to recently, Colin Mensah, who does a Dear Black Mum blog, and again, Positive Birth Company, where they kind of reference the charity call five times more. about the kind of the incredible, disproportionately high maternal mortality rate in different ethnicities, but within the UK, which is just, it blows my mind whenever I read that. You just think, if you're here, you should all get the same. Do you know what I mean? There shouldn't be any kind of difference. None of this should be happening. But it's all about kind of educational pieces and sort of knowledge within those areas. I mean, you guys do a huge amount sort of raising awareness of these issues, and you speak for the advocacy and the change. I mean, what is the change, do you think, that needs to happen? And how can other people get involved in this?
Gosh, it's such a complex question.
Sorry, I know it's huge, isn't it? I'm sorry. It blows my mind, this whole kind of area, because of how this is existing in, you know, in 2020, 2021 UK. So, but take your time. But the question still stands.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, firstly, the Five Times More campaign is absolutely incredible and crucial and shocking. All the things you said. It's unacceptable that Black women are five times more to die during the maternity period than their white counterparts. In terms of migrant mothers, we use the word migrant very, very loosely anyway. The statistics aren't there because monitoring and evaluation at government level doesn't take into account a person's country of origin a lot of the time. But it kind of makes sense to us. And this is very much what we've seen with our client group. So most of our clients have experienced post-traumatic stress disorder, either in their country of origin, seeking safety as they travel, or once they're in the UK. And there's traditionally a lack of clarity on how to access healthcare in the first instance, or a lack of knowledge disseminated with care providers in a culturally safe way and in an informed way, utilising correct avenues such as interpreting services and so on. And so that's where we kind of come into our own, really, because we have so much more time to unpack things. And things that maybe being an English-speaking British person, you might take for granted, like the language that's used. Like, we're brought up in a culture of healthcare that we're all kind of vaguely familiar with, but still can be utterly perplexing when it comes to having a baby. And so that's, you know, the most important thing of what we do, just unpack and support people to empower themselves through knowing stuff and through knowing that they have choices around pregnancy and birth. And I think it's a really interesting time. I think the Five Times More campaign and similar campaigns on the internet, they're a real eye-opener for many medical professionals and birth professionals to practice in a culturally safe way. And so how we do that is through recognizing birthing people's unique identities. And as an organization, we're kind of prepared to challenge our own cultural systems and assumptions. And we really try and promote the idea that women should be valued and their rich cultures need to be valued in order to be supported in a way that's appropriate to them. And through this understanding, it can really significantly improve a mother's well-being. I mean, even by virtue of having, you know, a mother companions by her side, she's hopefully then able to feel more supported. She can disclose things to us, and people do disclose a lot of things to us, so we can get different support networks lined up as well. So in terms of what do we do, I think awareness raising is really crucial. I know there's so many organisations, ourselves included, that provide training for example, medical professionals. I spoke to some obstetricians and gynaecologists last week, a couple of weeks ago now, and did a training on post-traumatic stress in the birth room, and how triggers can function, and how that they can be really challenging to a woman's birthing experience, and how we can be better informed about that. But there's definitely, this is the tip of the iceberg, and there's so much work that needs to be done, and that also needs to be written into policy. And we're kind of getting there slowly. Luckily, the two NHS trusts that we work with in Bristol are really trying to practice in a really culturally safe way, and the partnership working is really, really different to how things were when we even started. So yeah, change is happening, but it's a long way to go.
My goodness, yeah. So it's a huge broad breadth of stuff you guys cover. I mean, you really are, it kind of made me have a little kind of knot actually in my throat a little bit, because you really are kind of thinking back on what that you were saying about one of your clients saying that you really are, oh, so you're my friends then. And it really is, you're kind of there from, you know, trying to cover as much as you can, obviously in the kind of depth and level as you can, you know, seeking advice. You know, you're not pretending to be medical advisors on this, but you're trying to take as much advice as you can to really inform them and help kind of shape the best sort of birthing experience for them and thereafter as well. You know, I know, I see that you're partnered with Unseen UK and the Bristol Refugee Rights. I'm not sure if they were the people that you were referencing in your last answer, but what kind of difference does that really bring to vulnerable mothers with you guys kind of partnering with other sort of similar charities like that?
Yeah, and I mean, luckily we're in Bristol, and the refugee support sector is phenomenal. I've lived in a few cities around the UK, indeed in countries, and it's a beautiful thing. And I couldn't have imagined starting Project Mama in a different city, to be honest. We've got Bristol Refugee Rights, like you mentioned, and Refugee Women of Bristol, who can provide really great holistic support. So the partnership working is integral to the work we do. So sometimes when we go to meet a mum for the first time, maybe she's not linked in with any of these services already. And so she might need help with housing or some advice on her asylum case. And she can't even begin to think about her pregnancy or engage with it because she doesn't know where she's going to be living. She's maybe afraid of being evicted or even deported in some instances. And so this can be a terrifying time. And so it's great to have these links. So for example, we can call our colleagues at Bristol Refugee Rights, and they can make sure that different aspects of a mum's support needs are met. And so that's really important. So when we leave a mama, she's like a lot more confident in accessing these services. So that's a really important part of what we do, but also that she can just engage with her pregnancy and just kind of really focus on baby and what's going on. And we can help with that. And we do all sorts of things to kind of prepare her for when she goes to give birth. So we look at birth preferences. Before COVID times, we used to go to the delivery suite so she could experience a delivery suite for the first time. So she knows what to expect. So those, more stressful hormones that are very counterintuitive to labour can kind of be dispelled ideally as much as possible. And some of the support that we do is like, we'll go to a mama's house and maybe do some yoga with her and, you know, get women in their bodies, because a lot of trauma that women have faced has had such a negative impact on their bodies. You know, the body sometimes isn't a safe space anymore and there's a real disconnect. So through just like really tiny interventions, we can hopefully increase the chances of a more comfortable and birth experience and early parenting experience.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. That sounds incredible. And I'm just thinking, like, you're not necessarily a big team, are you? I'm just kind of taking in everything that you're saying. And obviously, it's amazing. You get the support from other, like you say, the Bristol Refugee Rights and stuff like that. But you're, just to give a little bit of a shout out to your team before time kind of runs out on us. I mean, you've got, you know, operations and sort of trustees and mother companions. But actually, you know, how many of you guys that are doing all of this?
Yeah, good question. It fluctuates. I mean, during COVID, oh my goodness, 40, 50, 60. but now things have calmed down a little bit and our COVID project came to an end in January. So our team, it started off as me and seven amazing MCs, of which I think pretty much all of them are still with us, which is great, really incredible people. We've learned an awful lot along the way. Now we're a team of 5 employees, and we've got approximately 20 odd volunteers.
That's incredible. 20 volunteers. That's incredible that you have such a, well, it's an incredible network. I mean, it must be, you must anticipate that growing after, you know, I'm guessing it must have grown over the last 3 years, but do you see that getting bigger and bigger?
Absolutely. I mean, we haven't yet, until this year, had to say, no, we can't support a mama. However, we're dangerously close to that happening. We need a lot more volunteers. So we were going to be running a mother companion training program for mums who have been through the project, because we used to have a drop-in group every Friday called Mama Hub, and it was a really great place that we'd all hang out, we'd do some yoga together, we'd cook some food together. So we had loads of amazing food from mums from like Kenya and Somalia, and it was just amazing. It's super chilled out space, and we're really missing that. We're really, really missing that. And so a lot of the mums who we've seen change rapidly and their situations change rapidly are really, really keen to come back and volunteer with us. So we're hoping to do that kind of doula-ish training that's specifically looking at supporting people who've experienced trauma. But yes, watch this space with that one. Yeah, we'll be growing, I think, as much as we can, funding permitting. But that's a whole nother story.
Yeah, that's another podcast. But that's fantastic that women that have actually been supported by you guys originally have come back and gone, no, let me, you know, it's such a woman kind of connection ethos, isn't it? You know, women helping other women and just being like, no, actually, let me come back and let me give back to you guys. I think that's such a wonderful note for the work you guys do, and obviously the love and trust they have with you when they were the ones that needed you. You know, I think that's an amazing testimony for you guys. Sadly, we're running out of time. I'm literally looking at time remaining and watching the clock tick, and I have so many more questions to ask you, so many more things that I want to find out. But for the last few minutes, I mean, if people want to reach out to you in terms of volunteering, want to actually be part of Project Mama, or if they know someone that needs support or they need support themselves, what is the best way for them to contact you guys?
Yeah, so I mean, the first place is just heading to the website projectmama.org, and you can just give us a call. My phone number's on there, so give me a call and we can talk things through, like what is it you need, what is it your neighbor or family member or whoever it is might need in this instance. And then we kind of take it from there, really. We just talk to a mum about what's missing, what do you need, what's your ideal birth support look like. And at the minute, we're kind of prioritising those who don't have a birth partner. In terms of immigration status, we're really open. You know, many of our clients, like I said, like have experienced some sort of exploitation or trauma, but similarly, others haven't. You know, they've just moved over and maybe their spouse hasn't got their visa yet, so you know, they're maybe in a significantly more better position in terms of finances, but they still don't have anyone. So yeah, it's always worth giving us a call and talking things through, or referring via our website.
Absolutely. And we will make sure all of the links are in our show notes and in our blog post as well, to make sure that's really easy for anybody listening to be able to just one click away to be able to contact you guys. Fiona, thank you so much for coming on. It's been really fascinating, just really getting under the skin and understanding what Project Mama does. It floors me that, you know, people can dedicate their, you know, so much of their time and energy and love to really help others during this challenging time, but also, you know, way beyond that, and are there for people that really, really need them. So thank you for doing that. I think it's an incredible thing that you guys are doing.
Oh, thank you so much. And thanks for having us on. I really, really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much. And I'm so annoyed at the time. We're just ticking away, but thank you so much. Take care, and hopefully actually get to physically see you soon one day in the future, when this pandemic nonsense is behind us. Thanks so much, Fiona. Take care. To find out more information about the topics covered in today's podcast, please go to the iCandy blog page on www.icandyworld.com/iclife, where you'll find all the relevant links. iCandy is a proud supporter of Great Ormond Street Children's Hospital Charity. COVID-19 means the hospital is facing new challenges and needs more support than ever to continue the life-changing care and research for seriously ill children. If you are able to support GOSH, please head to our dedicated fundraising page on www.justgiving.com/company/iCandy.